Injured in a car accident? It's about money, your settlement. We cap attorney's fees at 30% of the first million. Any recovery above that is all yours. No recovery? You pay no fees or costs. We strive to get you more at LawyerUp 904, Jacksonville.
Hey, welcome in. Glad you're along for the ride on this Tuesday installment of our program. Our Tuesdays are always brought to you by my friends at the Nimnick family of dealerships. My buddy Billy Nimnick, Lee Nimnick, the wonderful family that they are. They've been doing it here for a long time, since 1941. I've been buying my cars there since 1982. Some of my favorite people in the world, and I'm telling you, it's the car dealership to go. That's the name to know if you're buying a car here, Nimnick, and it has been for the longest time. Proud to have them as our Tuesday sponsor every single Tuesday. Frank Frangie, Hayes Car Lion, Lauren Brooks, Andrew Gibson. I'm full. Are you full?
I'm very full.
I'm full. Gibby has his normal eight jobs, so you didn't get a lot of our feast today.
No,
even though Gibby brought food.
I'm actually not full, so I missed out a little bit. But yeah. No, it was fun. It was fun.
Tell me all about it.
Yeah. And by the way, Hayes had a speaking thing. You and Rick had the chop and chomp, which is a fun thing. I've done that before. It's a blast.
We had a great time. Thank you to Neil Powell and everybody for having us out. We had an unbelievable time. It was at the River Club. Couldn't have gone better. And everybody's excited for Gators Knowles.
Yeah. So I can't wait as well. We had here, Mia put it together as part of one of the things we do on our social and digital platform of everybody had a number of folks brought in food and had food competitions. So Lauren and Jack O'Brien brought in pie. I'm going to speak to that in a minute. I think there's probably a firing in the offing, but I'll just pass that along to the boss and see if it happens that way. Joe and who made the turkey?
Richie.
Richie
told everyone, "Hey, I bought this. Okay. I just wanted there to be two turkeys."
He didn't try to cheat.
Okay, so
he did
not try to cheat. He bought. Yeah, so
he told everyone, "I got this from a store."
Joe Coward, who's a great cook, by the way, and did a great
fried
job.
Fried it up this morning. He showed pictures. Yep.
And so Joe and Richie did the turkey. I'll get to the dessert in a minute. But who did the Leon and E.T.?
Uh-huh, yeah, they
correct.
Did mac and cheese.
They both did a great job because I felt obligated to sample both.
Mashed potatoes.
That's what's
fun about this is you get to taste them both.
Donna and
we ended up with a store bought mashed potatoes because not enough people signed up for that. So but Donna's obviously
and
one.
Stuffing was
Matt Hayes and Hacker.
Both good.
Yes, yeah. Very different.
Yeah, Hacker was honest about the fact that Heidi made it.
He said he was the sous chef. Yeah, I think that counts.
Okay, and Matt Hayes like locked in.
Yes, he made cornbread and then there was chorizo and. One of my favorite all-time foods, crawfish in the stuffing or dressing.
It was really good. So everybody did a great job. So it was fantastic. We loved it. I ate way too much. Now I won't eat again until Thursday when I have my next Thanksgiving meal. But there is controversy. So Lauren made this fantastic pumpkin pie. But it's not just pumpkin.
Pumpkin mousse pie.
It was just fantastic.
Thank you.
It was really good. I was chowing down on it. Griffin was talking about how good the crust was.
Good.
Yeah, and so
the crust was instead of like a traditional graham cracker, it was like Biscoff type cookies mashed down with butter.
Yeah, and so we were all eating it, and then there was also a pie,
A chocolate pie,
that was brought in by your former friend Jack O'Brien. who sits next to you in the offices and by the way, I expect there to be a fight. The odds are Brooks is laying a lot of points.
Yeah.
Okay, in that fight.
I walked into the building and you could immediately feel a sense of like dread and terror.
Yeah, you could. I'm going to come up with a new phrase that no one's ever said before, but you could sort of cut the tension with a knife, is what happened. It's the brand new phrase I have. And so there was that. So anyway, Lauren made this great pie, but the chocolate pie won. And then we later found out Jack just went and bought it. Well, that's just terrible because he didn't tell. Lauren slaved over her stove in Greater Penman, Florida for hours. Okay, right? I mean,
I did slave. It was a no-bake pie, but yes, I did slave. It took hours.
Went to the pumpkin patch, got the pumpkins.
Clearly.
Okay. Went to the meringue patch.
The mousse.
You got the mousse.
The mousse place.
Okay, so... But it was fantastic.
Thanks.
But then Jack got disqualified.
Right. But in the end, what we learned was two out of the three judges don't like pumpkin.
Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith don't like pumpkin.
Thanksgiving.
So you were
cook-off, which included dessert, which of course was going to be pumpkin pie of some sort.
Both thought it was good. They just don't like pumpkin. Tony Smith said it's the first pumpkin thing he ever ate, and that he really liked it, but he liked chocolate more.
Right.
So, but anyway, but I think Jack, the latest I've heard, I want to follow up on this. that I don't know if this is true or not. I'm not embellishing. I'm just telling you what I've heard. I've heard that, A, Jack has been suspended. And then later, I've got an update. He's now been fired. And the latest update I got is he's been arrested. Okay, so if you knew that or not, but all three of those things have happened. It happened kind of in succession.
Poor
Jack. So we had to keep reporting.
It's tough before Thanksgiving. Yeah, it really behind is. Bars.
When I got here this morning, I arrived with Hacker and Matt Hayes. We all got here at the same time, and they actually took video of all of us walking in with our stuff. And I saw Jack like setting up his pie, and I looked at Hacker, and I was like, Jack did not make that pie. And he started laughing.
You
He's
spotted
like, I don't
it
know.
Right out of the gate. So, but it was really fun. We're joking. It was a fun time. Your pie was fantastic.
Thank you.
And all the food everybody made was really, it was a really fun kind of a time. We were all kind of gathered in the conference room and eating it. We had a wonderful time. So it was a great thing. All right, a lot of things to talk about today on the program. I think we're going to see a football player Sunday who changed the sport. I think he changed the sport. Now, you just saw him in person. But I think he changed the sport. And I'm going to talk about it. I'm serious about that. I believe that.
But before we go there, okay. I just want to make sure I'm clear on this. We had Thanksgiving judges
yes.
that don't like pumpkin.
Yeah, come on.
I mean.
Thank you.
I'm not
they
trying to,
beforehand.
Like, you know, like disparage anybody.
Right.
But, like, if you're going to have people, like, judge a boxing contest, maybe they should enjoy the sport of boxing. Like Thanksgiving and pumpkin, that's like a staple. It's not like bringing like fruitcake, and it's like, well, why would you bring this? This is a Christmas thing.
I think Hayes is saying if you brought in a judge that didn't like turkey, it probably wouldn't have been the right judge. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah.
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 Good point. He's got a good
I just,
point
that I can see why there would be some controversy there.
So they have first announced on XL Primetime that I lost the contest. And then when I confronted Mia in the hallway, I was like, how could I lose when that one was store-bought?
So,
because we were supposed to clearly indicate if it was store-bought, you can't win. Yeah. And then it turned out that, yes, the judges didn't like, two of the three judges didn't like pumpkin.
Yeah, by the way, I do have another update.
I mean, let's have an eggnog contest have judges that are lactose intolerant.
By the way, I do have another update. Okay, I told you earlier that Jack had been suspended, later found out he was fired, and then arrested. I've now found out that he's been sentenced. Okay. And I think it might be a life sentence. Okay. And I'll update you later on as we go.
Is like Leavenworth still a thing? Like, is that still like a tough prison?
Jack asked me yesterday, he's like, you know, are you ready for this? And I was like, well, I've already worked on my dessert today because I worked on it back to back days. And I was like, what are you making? Can you tell me? And he's like, no, I can't tell you because if I screw it up, I have to make something else. And I was like, oh, okay.
So that's what he said?
That's what he said. So he led me to believe yesterday he was making
what
something.
What a bad person, okay? I think the death sentence is in play.
Oh, no.
I think the death sentence. So
I vote against that.
So there you go. So,
Now you can carry on with Lamar Jackson.
Yeah,
I just want to make sure I was
better.
Hearing this
that
correctly.
That was better stuff. That was better stuff. So,
I bet Lamar likes pumpkin.
You saw Lamar?
Yeah.
I think he's changed the sport. I mean, joking aside, I can still remember, Lauren, you going to the Gator Bowl game.
Mm-hmm.
And Lauren's
got five
picks. And you've got a good eye for that stuff. And I remember you telling me afterwards, I was working a game somewhere. I wasn't, I don't remember, when was it? When was the Gator Bowl?
Would have been the 2017 Gator Bowl.
I think so.
So probably during the Jaguar playoff run. So I was probably with the Jaguars during the playoff run. But I remember you going to the game.
Mm-hmm.
And telling me afterwards I wasn't sold on the guy. And then heard other people say it too. You weren't alone in that. I think he's changed the sport. I think the sport is different because of Lamar Jackson. I'm going to tell you how in a little bit. And we get to see him here. He hasn't been in this, by the way, in this stadium since that Gator Bowl game. You realize that?
Maybe we should put up the ghost graphic that we had for Sam Darnold.
Maybe
there's something there.
So I'm going to talk about that. I'm going to make some comparisons about Anthony Richardson, not comparing him to Lamar, but some thoughts about Anthony Richardson. How gigantic is Friday night to Florida State? How absolutely gigantic? How important is it? See, the game, it's way more important for Florida State than Florida because they're having a better year and because they've been down for a while. You know, I said this yesterday. It's been a long time now. Been a minute since they've beaten Florida. How important? And Rick Ballew said it during our handoff yesterday, so I'm certainly going to get to that coming up on the program today. So we got a lot of things I want to get to that we'll kind of talk about. I got a thought, too, about Georgia coming up in just a bit. All kind of fun stuff. The playoff expansion. How about this? Think about this for a second. The playoff expansion. We have 1 week left in the regular season. I saw someone tweet this. I'm stealing it, but I don't care. We have 1 week left in the regular season. How many, other than our team, Your team doesn't count. If you're a Gator fan, Seminole fan, forget that. But other than your team, how many teams in college football are we really talking about?
Five.
Five, maybe six.
Yeah.
Ohio State, Georgia, for sure. TCU, because they're in play.
Michigan.
Michigan, for sure. We're still talking
about.
One of those is going to be
knocked out.
And we're talking about Clemson, because you don't know. You're talking about USC. Yeah. Okay,
so yes, six.
Six. That's how many teams are we're even in a conversation about.
I've already forgotten about Clemson.
Well, I hear you. And so that's many. It's a great point. So there's a handful of teams that are in the conversation that we're even having a conversation about. Other than talking about our team, no one's talking about anybody else. Nobody. Other than the Gators and the Noles, who we cover, I'm not talking about anybody other than those six or seven teams. You know, none, right? If we had a playoff, if we had the 12-team playoff, how many teams would we be talking about? 20?
Yeah. Well, and think of how gigantic
the
FSU-Florida game would be.
Be gigantic. Right.
I mean, FSU would be playing for a spot in the playoff.
Correct. Yep. FSU would be trying to get in. That's how big that game would be.
With a massive case for getting in.
All these clowns that have told us it destroys the importance of the regular season. These nut jobs that have told us for 80 years that it'll destroy the integrity of the regular season. You just hit it. The regular season game between Florida and FSU would be so much more important. And a bunch of other ones, too.
Maybe it wouldn't be on a Friday.
Yeah. Maybe not. But the point is, it would be. And so I would think we probably would be talking about, honestly, 20 teams. 20 teams that...
Certainly at least 16.
Yeah. Well, 12 are going in.
Correct.
So I've got to believe for that 10th, 11th, and 12th spot, there's seven or eight teams we'd be talking about to get those three spots. You know, so how did we not do that? What were we thinking for 80 years?
It's 100
years. I mean, the fact that the regular season will not be as important. That was what we always heard. It'll destroy the integrity of the regular season.
Meanwhile, in basketball, you have 68 teams that go.
Correct. And it's the best thing in sports. So we'll talk about that coming up. All right, but let's take a break. A lot of things I want to get to today on the program. Denny Thompson stops by to talk about Anthony Richardson. We'll ask him about Marcus Stokes and a whole lot more coming up. I want to talk a little bit about Trevor that comes up. Lane Kiffin's in the news. God bless Lane Kiffin. I like him more and more every day. See if he can call it out, the reporter.
It's amazing.
He's
gone
tremendous.
From villain to he's like favorite, the most lovable guy in college football.
It's amazing, and it really is. So, but let's start with Lamar Jackson. That's how we'll kick off the program on an MNIC Tuesday. It's 1010 XL 92.5 FM. Glad you're with us on this Tuesday installment of our program here, along with Hayes Carlion, Lauren Brooks, and Andrew Gibson. I'm Frank Frangi. The stats look like this for Lamar Jackson. Through 10 games, 16 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, nothing spectacular there. Not bad, not spectacular. 63.4% completion. That would be middle of the pack at best, would you say, in the NFL, or low?
I'll look, but I would say so. It feels low.
It's either middle of the pack or low, 63.4%. He's also rushed for 666 yards through 10 games. And he's averaging 7 yards a carry.
Whew, that's pretty good.
Now, quarterbacks, by the way, tend to rush for high yard averages anyway because they don't run that often. So, I mean, if you look at running quarterbacks, they'll have a higher yard per carry than most running backs because they don't have the 2 yard up the middle.
And they don't get charged for sacks like they do in college.
Correct. Well, that's 100% correct. But number one, they don't. But also, even in the NFL – There's no 3 yard runs for quarterbacks very often. Quarterback's either getting sacked, not running, or he's taken off for 15 yards. So they tend to have higher yard per carriage average. Nonetheless, he's got a 79 yard run this year. He's run for 3 touchdowns this year. I said through the 16 passes. So if you glanced at the numbers, you wouldn't be wowed. Okay, you wouldn't. I mean, you'd have to look at the running. Well, he's rushed for a lot of yards. He's going to rush for 1,000 yards. But still. Yet he's not about the numbers. I think Lamar Jackson, more than anybody we have seen, more than Michael Vick, more than others, is the guy that said it's okay to be a running quarterback, even if you're better at running than passing. It's okay. And I've watched this game change to that. Now, I still think 99% of the time you're going to have to win in the NFL in the pocket with a passer. But I think he's changed the dynamic of the game. I think there are more running quarterbacks than there have ever been. I think there's more running plays called than ever before. I think he's a slight guy, by the way. He's not very big. There's more smallish quarterbacks than there's ever been. And part of that's because the game has changed and the field is spread and there's more horizontal football than there's been. I understand all that. I think we're seeing a guy who is, because of all that, could get to the Hall of Fame, Hayes, even without rings. I think he's a player that is remembered for changing the game 30 years from now as anybody we've seen in a long time.
Yeah, I would agree, because I do think that the thing that he's been able to put to bed is you can't win playing like this. He's 44-15 as a starter.
Right.
I mean, that's remarkable. That's an incredible winning percentage. And again, the quarterback's going to get a lot of the credit for that. You know, it's that's just unbelievable that they've been that prolific with Lamar. It's interesting. His second year was the big year. His first full year as the starter, they went 13-2 in the 15 games he played in, 36 touchdowns to just 6 interceptions, 66.1% completion percentage. He was the MVP of the league. And those are MVP numbers before you even get to the rushing that he put up in 2019. The other thing that's interesting about Lamar is that, like you mentioned, he is on pace for his third 1,000-yard rushing season of his career, which, again, is only in its fifth year. It feels like he should be older than this. He's 25 years old.
That's amazing.
Now, his birthday is in January, so he's getting ready to turn 26. But if you're the Ravens, you still have him for year 26, 27, 28, 29, 30. That should be 5 really strong years before he does hit 30, and then you worry about, does he lose some of the running ability that makes him such a great player? But in 5 years, maybe his passing game has evolved enough and his knowledge of defenses and things like that to where, you know, he's able to still be a really effective quarterback. With his game evolving a little bit. But, there's no doubt. It's going to be tough to tell the story of the NFL without Lamar Jackson if he keeps this up, because if he finishes his career winning 75% of the games that he starts in with an MVP already, he's going to make it to Canton.
I also think you have to credit the Ravens for making sure that the offense fits with what Lamar is talented at.
Great point.
Versus trying to mold him into being what all the other NFL passers are. It's Greg Roman's fourth season as offensive coordinator with the Ravens. Lamar's first year, Greg Roman wasn't there, and that was his worst year statistically. He's come a long way since then. I think a lot of credit has to go to them for being able to adjust to their talent versus trying to fit him into everyone else's scheme.
Really good point, and an extension of that point, because it's exactly what you're saying, and being willing to do it.
Right.
Not just saying, hey, look, you know, Bill Polian wants you to go work out a wide receiver, go do this. But the willingness to do it. Not just the okay, we'll try it. You know, and Lauren makes a great point. If you're willing to do it, you got to build around it.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to build your team around it. That means your offense, your defense, all of it. And they've always been a good defensive team. That doesn't mean you can always win with a game manager, and he's certainly more than that. But I'm telling you, I want him to have a horrible game Sunday, because the good guys need to win that. We need to get some wins going here. But I'm really excited about watching him calling the game, because I admire how he's gone about his business. I admire how he's stayed true to who he is. And I love the way the game is changing because of that. I'm going to talk about Trevor later on in the program, but as to how it affects Trevor Lawrence, I still believe it's not a coincidence that Trevor is now playing his best football, and he's also running more than he has his whole time in the NFL. I think he's playing free and easy. I think he's not afraid to take off and run, and I think that's a big part of his success right now.
There's no question about it, and it's, again, not to, you know, take us off topic, but just in terms of staying with quarterbacks, it's why Anthony Richardson is such a disappointment, because if you're a quarterback that has that skill set, you have got to utilize it. How often is a Ravens fan ever had to say, boy, I wish Lamar would have run it more? He runs it all the time because he's really good at it, and he realizes that. You know, I think Trevor Lawrence was a little gun shy, certainly last year and in the first part of this year. Not to say that he's on the level athletically as Lamar and Richardson, but there's a good athlete there. I mean, he certainly is a mobile player, and if it's there and he can take off, he can get an explosive run. It's absolutely making him a better player. It's something that it's so demoralizing for the defense when the quarterback breaks a run. And if you can add that skill to your offense, you've got to take advantage of it. Or you are deliberately holding yourself back and the team back. If you can run and you're not running, you're a selfish player.
Well, where's Lamar headed? He's going to play, barring injury, he's playing for 10, 15 more years.
He's a free agent in March.
Yeah, right. We don't know who he's playing for.
Well, they'll tag him. Yes, he is. But
you don't know forever who he's playing for. But assuming that he stays healthy, which whether it means he's a career Raven or plays for somebody else, he's playing 10, 12 more years minimum. Are there Super Bowl wins? Are there more MVPs? Are there more players who start playing like him? And by the way, I think it's yes, yes, and yes for me. What do you think?
I think the trickiest part is, like you said, the injury. It is difficult to run as much as he runs and stay healthy throughout all 17 games plus the postseason, which is why we've seen in the past him not be able to make it through that. But let's say he is able to, stay healthy. I totally agree.
10 to 12 years seems like, I'd say, best case scenario. Okay. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's a little shorter than that. And we'll see.
Because of playing style?
I think so. Okay. I think when he gets to be 30, he's going to have to change how he plays.
Okay.
And we'll see if he can do that. I certainly think at 35 he's going to have to.
Right.
And so that's 10 years away.
And by the way, sports has seen that. Sports has seen power pitchers become control pitchers.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that your body does what your body does.
Yeah, I think in terms of postseason, it's going to be tough because I think they'll be certainly in the tournament more often than not. But you look at the players just in the AFC that you've got to get past. I mean, you know, look, Patrick Mahomes is going to be doing this longer than Lamar Jackson, and so is Josh Allen. And they are never getting out of Kansas City and Buffalo, respectively. And who knows what Burrow does and what Herbert does and what Trevor does and, you know, what these other teams that don't have their guy yet, who they're able to find and develop. I just think the path is so difficult. So I don't know that there's MVPs and Lombardi trophies in Lamar Jackson's future, but I do think that there's multiple playoff appearances. I think there's multiple AFC North division titles. But, I mean, it is going to be really, really difficult to come out of the AFC in the next 10 years.
Have they done enough to surround Lamar Jackson with weapons? I know they had some running back injuries, but I don't feel like he's had a stud wide receiver, at least doesn't have it this year.
Yeah, he hasn't. I mean, I think it's a very fair point. Mark Andrews is certainly an elite tight end.
By far their leading receiver.
Yeah, that they took in the third round in that draft. But, you know, it receiver, they've been, I think, subpar really the whole time he's been there. They certainly are now. I mean, they were on lockdown Sunday. They got very little separation against Carolina. CJ Henderson and Horn were locking them down left and right. So, I think it's a difficult supporting cast for Lamar on the perimeter. And we'll see. It seems like the Ravens have really tried to fix that. It looked like Bateman would be, you know, the answer. He had a great week one. Then he got hurt again. And so I think they've tried to fix it. And Bateman, I think, will be good once he's healthy next year. But, it's been tough. You know, so I think a lot of Lamar Jackson's, you know, passing, you do have to grade on a pretty high level degree of difficulty, because he hasn't had some of the weapons that Mahomes and Josh Allen have had.
Yeah, imagine Devontae Adams with Lamar Jackson throwing to him.
Yeah, or Jamar Chase. Or,
right, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean,
that would be insane.
Right.
Yeah. The and one other thing, by the way, I made the point that other guys will play like him. Well, they don't grow on trees. it's hard to find somebody that's as dynamic as Lamar Jackson is. He's a very good player, not just as a runner. He's a good football player. He's a good passer. He may not be a 70% passer who's throwing 23 touchdowns and four picks, but he's a damn good NFL passer as well as a good runner. That's why they're not everywhere, those guys.
And it still just amazes me that a kid from Boynton Beach with this kind of talent had to go play for Louisville.
Well, I'm telling you, I think
he was drafted after Taven Bryan.
Yeah. Well, but I think what is the story? Muschamp almost had him, and
I think circled back to him late.
Yeah, but was it? I don't want. It wasn't Morningweg, but somebody went in there. He didn't pick Skylar Morningweg over Lamar Jackson, but do you remember that they tried to get him late, and it was too late to get him. But you're right. Your larger point is Alabama, Ohio State, Florida, LSU, none of them worked very hard to get him, did they?
No.
Interesting. But the game's changed now. So today's Lamar Jackson would be a 5-star and might be one of the top 10 players in the country if he was the same guy. Mm-hmm. It's just how much the game has changed.
By the way, Muschamp did offer Jackson a scholarship during Lamar's senior year, but then Muschamp was fired. So then McElwain took over, and Lamar was never going to come.
I wonder if he'd have gone.
I don't think so, because I think it was like Muschamp was not committing to him being a quarterback, and
is that what it was?
Louisville, I think, all liked him as a quarterback the whole time.
I got you.
Yeah, I think it was one of these like, yeah, we kind of like you, we kind of don't.
Oh, I'm watching the – are you guys watching – I know, Hayes, you're locked in.
Oh, yeah. Well, I have France in 3.5.
Are you watching this, Lauren?
I have.
France just went on like a 3-goal run. Does that happen in soccer?
It doesn't often, but sometimes when it rains, it pours. Sure. France is really good.
They scored 3 goals, and like, we need to do that. Can we run that offense?
Well, it was 2-1.
Are they running the spread?
The run and shoot.
Let's do that.
By the way, the whole Anthony Richardson, Lamar Jackson conversation is so interesting. If AR had been keeping the ball himself and running more, would there be NFL scouts that say, look, Lamar Jackson wasn't the best passer in college, but he worked really hard, and now he's a better passer?
You're one step ahead of me. Let's take a break. Let's get to Anthony Richardson. I got a thought. I got some comparisons. All that coming up. Stay with us.
Richardson gets the snap off. Drops back to throw. Looking. Hail Mary for the back of the end zone.
He throws
it out of bounds past the end line. No chance for a catch. And the Gators lose at Vanderbilt 31-24. Vanderbilt beats Florida at home for the first time since 1988.
It's a Nimnik Tuesday on The Frangie Show. Nimnik, your friends in the car business since 1941.
The last time Vanderbilt beat Florida in Nashville, Lauren, you had just turned 6?
Correct.
First grade? Straight
that
A's?
Correct.
Straight A's?
Hopefully right around there, yeah.
Straight A's and first grade. Were you a good first grader? Were you a star first grader?
That was when I was at St. Paul's Episcopal, not St. Paul's Catholic. And truth be told, that was a little easier, so it probably was straight A's.
Yeah.
When I switched schools, it got a little more difficult.
Okay.
So, yeah.
You would have been 13?
I was 12, yeah.
12, okay. 7th grade?
Reform school.
I mean, it's been so long. Let me give a theory to you. I told you the Tyler Glasnow theory, which didn't, because nobody knows who he is, so it didn't probably resonate with many.
I got it.
Is there a little, and I'm not saying exact comparisons, because they're stuck, but is there some Jeff Driskel, Doug Johnson in there? Now, Doug Johnson didn't run, okay? So it's a Stifford style. Jeff Driskel was a 5-star. Jeff Driskel was one of the fastest players on the team. Remember that run at Vanderbilt?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's one of the fastest players on the team. He's 6'4", 230, and he could really run. Had a great arm, but he never had the knack.
Yeah, never could figure it out.
He just didn't have the knack for how to do it.
Remember the Miami game? That's what ended him.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I absolutely remember it. So,
and they got in the red zone all the time, and he kept throwing pick after pick.
He just did. Jeff Driskel just didn't have the knack. Like Anthony, great kid, tried really hard, great teammate, but you have to have a knack to play quarterback. No matter how strong you are, no matter how tight your spirals are, no matter how far the ball goes, no matter how fast you run, no matter how big you are, there's and it's hard. And there's this knack of knowing when to check it down and when not to, and when to take off and run and when not, and to be able to be accurate even when you're off balance. And that's what the great quarterback, they have all that. Danny Werfel had the best knack of anybody I ever saw. Danny Werfel was maybe 6'1", maybe 210 pounds. I'm not sure could throw it across a parking lot. He had nothing on the ball, wasn't quick, ran fast enough, but he had the incredible knack, right? He had such a knack. Sometimes a guy like Peyton Manning comes along as both, right? But Tom Brady had both, but that knack to know what to do when 280-pound guys are trying to knock your head off and teams are changing coverages and fast defensive guys are out there. It makes it look like a zone and it's really a man. It makes it look like a man. It's really a zone and they're blitzing and they're not blitzing and they're twisting up front and you got to identify the mic and it's hard. And Jeff Driskel never had the knack. I thought he was going to be great, by the way. Didn't you?
Yeah, he had all the tools.
So
it's a great comparison.
Isn't that kind of...
Because Driskel sort of fades.
Yeah.
Because it's been so long now from Gator memory,
right.
I would say. And there were some good.
Yeah. The 2012 season, he had a great year.
But it was always like you kept waiting. You kept waiting for the big step from Jeff Driskel because you could see the star potential. It just never happened. And he went to Louisiana Tech, right, for his final year.
He's still a backup quarterback for the Texans right now.
Backup quarterback who sometimes plays tight end.
Right.
Because he's so fast.
Is it also similar to Blake Bortles?
Yes. Now, different, but there are a lot of similarities to Blake.
Because everybody thought, here's a guy with all this potential, but he never could figure it out.
Blake was very similar. The difference with Blake was, I thought Blake had the knack. He couldn't pass well enough. You know, he didn't throw a good enough ball. He just Anthony throws a beautiful ball. But I think there is a comparison in there, Lauren. I think Blake Bortles...
The lack of knack.
I thought Blake made a lot of the right choices. I thought Blake knew
when... He just didn't execute properly?
He just wasn't very accurate. Wasn't very good. He just wasn't good at throwing the football. Didn't you think that?
Yeah.
But it wasn't a matter of picking the wrong stuff. He just wasn't... Doug Johnson comes to mind, even though Doug wasn't a fast guy. Doug Johnson had a howitzer. Doug Johnson might have had the best... Other than maybe Grossman, Doug Johnson might have had the best arm in the C. Spurrier era. Do you agree with that?
I would. He was a big-time pitcher.
I mean, big-time baseball player, had a rifle arm. He had a John Elway-like arm. But he wasn't great. But Noah Brindis was better at knowing what to do. Noah just had no talent, you know. And I tried to throw Felipe Franks in there, but he wasn't the level of talent these other guys were. But he didn't have a knack.
He had a huge arm.
He had a huge arm and was fast and big, but he didn't have the knack. There's something about that knack of knowing how to play quarterback. And I think I'm convinced now that Anthony doesn't have that. And I don't know, you can have the best trainer in the world in Danny. I think Danny's a really good trainer. You can have the best coaching in the world. I think Dan Mullen's a really good quarterback coach. You can have a good head coach, which I hope and think Napier will be. But I don't think you can, Hayes, I don't know that you can inject the knack into a guy. He's got it or he doesn't. I really believe that.
Yeah, I agree. I think if Anthony Richardson played, you know, 4 more years of college football, I'm not sure it's going to get a lot better. I don't see it. You know, to me, again, and again, I'll say this when Denny gets here, and I agree with you. Denny does a great job, and but to me, Anthony Richardson's at times plays a game and that is inexplicable to defend, and Saturday was the biggest example of that. It was a very, for whatever reason, and I'm not suggesting that he does it deliberately, but you become a selfish player when you do not do the thing that makes you so great and thusly would make your team so great and certainly give you a winning result in an environment in which you're a 14-point favorite. To not run the ball, to not have to not even enter into his mind and then to defend it post game and be like, well, they were doing a good job. No, they weren't. We were all watching it.
Well, and
there was no one there.
When he came out today, did you hear his quotes today? Was it today or yesterday? I think it was today. What was
it? It was yesterday.
The availability was yesterday. And he said, listen, he said, it's on me. There were times I should have pulled it and I didn't. I didn't recognize that the runs were there. And I could have backpedaled into the end zone, but I didn't do it because I didn't recognize it. Well, okay, I've never played quarterback in college. I don't want to act like I know more than I do. But I would think at this point as a college quarterback, it certainly looked like there were some reads that would have been easier to see than they were for him that day. I'm not, I just, I mean, it seems to me that quarterback should, because it looked like it would have been a very easy pull a lot of those times.
We're not talking about some roving safety. We're talking about, is there a guy 4 feet in front of you?
Yeah.
And if there isn't, you keep the ball and you run it. It's about as simple as football can be.
And if we're being fair here, how much of that is on Billy Napier by now, who has yet to realize that he's not good at zone reads? Because it's clear now that it doesn't look like to me, now maybe that's a big part of their offense, right?
I don't know that he can change the offense that much at this point.
Well, and you know, I hear you. And you can call different plays, but if that's you're right. If that's a staple of what your offense is, you can't just throw it out. I agree with that.
And that's why they've been so good at running the ball the last 2 weeks, previous 2 weeks, is because the threat of Anthony running was there against Texas A&M and South Carolina. So that opened up the holes for Johnson and Etienne.
It almost seemed like he made some decisions even before the read he was handing the ball off. It almost seemed like, you know, some pre-snap decisions that I'm giving this ball to Montrell Johnson, or I'm giving this ball to Trevor Etienne. Didn't it feel that way?
Yes, and it was never there.
Yeah, and it wasn't there. So my point about it is, the reason I hate this is I think this is a kid really trying. I think he's by all accounts a good teammate, a hard worker, but who was a better teammate or a harder worker than Jeff Driscoll? He was a great kid. I interviewed him a number of times. He's a genuinely good dude.
You said this about Emory Jones, Anthony's predecessor.
Yeah, correct. Who also, Emory Jones, it wasn't his knack as much, is he just, he didn't see things, you know, so I guess maybe that is knack.
Yeah.
So I think that's.
I mean, think of this. And this includes sacks. Not that they've had very many, but it does.
Yeah.
If Anthony Richardson only runs it 6 times on Friday night, which I think is absolutely in play, he will have not even gotten to 100 carries this year. How in the world is that possible?
Yeah.
When you're 6'4", 240, talking about they're going to feel my weight.
Yeah, not going to feel it if you don't run it.
Is that another Damian Pierce situation?
I get it, but he's not running.
But this isn't on
Napier. Yeah, it's on Richardson.
Yeah, but the comparison's a fair one. Damian Pierce, we were frustrated that they didn't hand him the ball. They're handing the ball to Anthony Richardson when they snap, but he's choosing not to run.
Correct.
So I wonder if Dan Mullen's sitting back saying, I told you guys.
Yeah, well,
he's not doing what I wanted him to do.
I promise you, Dan Mullen, who was so roundly criticized for not playing him, I promise you, Dan Mullen is saying, now you understand why we didn't play.
The failure, though, last season, because this doesn't absolve Dan Mullen, in my opinion. The failure last season was Dan Mullen didn't get Emory Jones ready to play.
Right, I agree.
That was the failure.
Yeah.
So, yes, I mean, Anthony Richardson
obviously
wasn't
ready. Yeah,
and
this doesn't mean Dan Mullen should still have the job.
Correct.
Dan Mullen should have handed the ball to
Dan Mullen had his hand-picked guy in Emory Jones and couldn't get him ready.
So as I watch Anthony Richardson, as we wrap this segment, again, we'll do it again with Danny because he coaches him. What's the end game? Because everyone still thinks go to the draft, because once he gets to the tryout season, once you get to the workout season, you don't have to play any games. Once the bowl, I assume he's going to play in the bowl game. You told me you don't think he is.
I wouldn't.
Yeah, I'm going to guess he's going to play in the bowl game. We'll see. I don't know. I'm going to guess he's going to play in whatever bowl they wind up in. I'm going to guess he's going to play in the bowl. It's me taking a guess. We'll see. But whatever happens after the bowl game, either after the FSU game if he doesn't, or after the bowl game if he does, he doesn't have to play in another football game. He doesn't have to throw to another covered receiver before the draft. He doesn't have to, because he's pretty good at those workouts.
It'll be the best pro day of the draft process.
Yeah, that's so. And once he's done playing in games, I said this about Doug Johnson. I'll never forget this. Doug Johnson was the backup of all backups in the NFL. He was Michael Vick's backup. Do you remember this? And he had the 6'3", 230, had this rifle arm, threw the most beautiful ball in the NFL.
He played when Vic broke his leg.
Well, and that's where I'm going with this, okay?
Yeah.
So he had this beautiful throwing arm, backing up Michael Vick. And do you remember the contract he was going to get? He was going to get this enormous contract, Gibby, when he became a free agent.
Yeah.
You know what happened? Vic broke his leg, and he had to play. and people saw that he wasn't good at playing.
Vic broke his leg against the Ravens in the preseason. I was at the game.
But I'm telling you, Gibby, if Doug Johnson doesn't have to play that year, at the end of the year he would have gotten this gigantic free agent contract because people would have saw the traits. But once they saw him play, he was just a guy. Remember that?
Yeah.
It having to play hurt his stock. Mm-hmm. Well, there's some of that with Anthony Richardson. Once the last game's over, whether that's Friday night or the bowl, once the last game's over, he's done with tape. Now it's workouts. Now it's traits. So do you believe right now as we sit here at 3:54 on November 22nd that somebody takes him in the first round of the National Football League draft?
I don't believe they will.
What about you?
Ugh, I'm so torn. I think it's like he goes right where Lamar goes. So, yes.
Okay.
Very late first round.
And I'm torn with you. Does Anthony Richardson get taken in the first round of the NFL draft?
I think so. If he runs a 4.4, like there's rumors that he might have done, then like I heard somebody say that that's even faster than Vic, right? I mean,
I think he's running faster than that.
Yeah,
I think at his pro day he'll be sub 4.4.
They'll draft based on that.
I think at his pro day he'll be sub 4.4. You agree with that?
Well, you'll be drafting a wildcat quarterback.
Yeah.
What you'll be drafting.
Yeah, I mean, to
think that Anthony Richardson has any idea of how to play an NFL defense and react off of it.
But don't NFL coaches?
It only takes one.
Don't NFL coaches say, "Yeah, but I can coach him"?
But see, well, you know what, Gibby? Here's the point. It only takes one to say that. But I think the knack has not been there so much this year that it now might not happen. So my guess is, and I'm guessing, and I'm with you, Lauren, I'm back and forth on it. I'm going to guess taken high, but not the first round.
Second.
Yeah. Second, third, late second, third, because it's hard to gamble with that first one. Even if you pick 27, it's hard to gamble with that one. But, and the other thing that would concern me is, I don't think they won a lot of games at Eastside.
They didn't.
Yeah, I don't think he was a winning
They're
quarterback.
They're actually better now.
Yeah, and they haven't won a lot of games. I mean, if he finishes 6-6 6-7 as a starter, because he lost last year the one game he started. So if he finishes 6-7 and doesn't play in a bowl game and had a losing record in high school, at some point that's got to factor in. So it's really interesting. And we'll see. One other thing on this before we take a break. I will tell you, if I'm Billy Napier on Friday night, he's running it 20 times.
In the first half.
Yeah, I mean, he's right. I am calling quarterback draws, quarterback power, quarterback sweep. I'm calling that what looks like a zone read, but he's told to keep it about the first three or four. Because if he keeps it 3 or 4 times and has some success, then Montrell Johnson and Trevor Etienne will make some yards. So
Keeps it and only gets like a yard or two.
But he kept it.
It does such wonders for him and for the offense to show it to the defense. And when they've done it early, it's translated in a good offensive performance. And that's the shame of Saturday.
Yep.
Because if he'd kept it early against Vanderbilt, they would have gotten out to a lead, Vanderbilt would have folded, and Florida would have won the game.
And the when they've rushed for 200 yards, they're 6-1. Is Georgia the loss?
Or
is it Tennessee? One of the losses. But
did they run for 200 yards on Georgia?
Yeah,
maybe it's Tennessee. Maybe Tennessee was the loss. Yeah. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, Fred Taylor is among the 28 finalists for the Hall, or semifinalists for the Hall of Fame. Fourth straight year he's made that. What is his toughest competition? We'll discuss it after this.
Draw play. Taylor skips 2 tackles. Right, and here we go.
Yeah.
Bye-bye. Brock Marion chasing. Brock Marion still chasing. Gets help from Smith, touchdown, no flags. A 90-yard run.
Welcome back to the Frangie Show on a Nimnik Tuesday. Vernon Lundquist on the call. We're going to talk about the Pro Football Hall of Fame class of 2023. It feels like for years we talked about the list, of course, mainly focusing on Tony Boselli. Now our focus is going to shift to Fred Taylor. It is his fourth year being a semifinalist. I think Fred Taylor deserves in, and I think this one will be a little bit easier to do because if anyone just goes back and looks at the highlights, Frank, well, then they're going to put him in.
Yeah, I don't know anybody that doesn't think he belongs in, but I also know there's some folks that aren't sure he's going in yet.
Sure.
I think he belongs in. There's no doubt in my mind. I'm biased. He was a Jaguar. He was a Gator. He works on our broadcast. He's a wonderful guy. I'm biased on so many levels to Fred, but I think he goes in, and I think he belongs. I think he's going to go in, and I think he belongs in. I don't know if it's this time. The 28, I do think he's the next running back in. You agree with that?
Yes.
I think he's the next running back in. The only other running back on this 28, I think, is Ricky Waters. I don't think there's another running back here.
There isn't.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, Eddie George and Chris Johnson didn't even make the semifinal cut list.
Yeah, and Fred's made it for the fourth time now. So I think Fred's the next running back to go in, and I think he's going to go in at some point because they're not done putting running backs in. You know, so I think, and again,
but
I know,
he may be one of the last ones to go
well,
in.
And I know,
besides maybe Adrian
and I know
Peterson.
Other running backs are going to become eligible. Their 5 years are going to pass, but I think he's the next running back in, and I think that will help him. That he doesn't have running back competition. I've said forever, what really hurt Fred was there were other running backs back when the AFC, back when the Pro Bowl really was AFC, NFC. It's changed 1,000 times. It's gone now. I got to where I couldn't keep track of what the Pro Bowl was anymore. But when Fred played, it was the AFC versus the NFC, and three or four backs made it from the AFC, and backs that were more well known than him, Curtis Martin and Jerome Bettis and Edgerrin James, and we're all in the AFC.
Priest Holmes, was he in there too?
Probably for a couple of years.
Yeah. So, but there was a
you'd have Jamal Lewis. Yeah. There was a couple guys that popped up for limited amount of time.
But because of all those guys, they wound up in the Pro Bowl ahead of Fred because they were in bigger markets. Their teams might have been better, and they were more well known than Fred. Not that the going to the Pro Bowl should be the determining factor, but I think that more than anything else, in my mind, was a factor. I think that was a big factor. I think that really did affect it. I think it did. But I believe he goes in. We have the list of 28. I won't bore people who are reading all 28 names, Hayes, but you have the list in front of you as well, and Lauren, you do as well. Who on this list are automatics this time around, in your opinion?
Just two. Joe Thomas, the left tackle for the Cleveland Browns, is a no-doubter. And Darrell Revis, the corner for the Jets, has got to get in on first ballot. And the rest of it, I think, is really up for debate.
Yeah, I agree with those two. And then there are a lot of guys that I would put in the conversation that I think Fred Taylor's going to be in. You know, whether it's Hines Ward, whether it's
Dwight Freeney.
Yep, Dwight Freeney, Reggie Wayne.
Yeah.
Guys like Jared Allen. I think there's a lot of names on here. Rodney Harrison.
The four you just mentioned are
Devin
going.
Devin Hester's. That's the one that I was looking for.
You think Devin Hester's going in. I don't think he's going in. If he goes in, I don't think he's going in soon. I could be wrong. The ones I think that are going into the Hall of Fame that are on this list, maybe not this time, I think Jared Allen's going to the Hall of Fame. There's no question about Revis and Joe Thomas, the two you mentioned. I think they're going to the Hall of Fame. That's three that I'm pretty sure are going to – I think Dwight Freeney's going to the Hall of Fame. I think there's four guys that I'm pretty confident are going to the Hall of Fame. After that, we will see.
Patrick Willis should,
Patrick
the linebacker
Willis,
from
Patrick
the 49ers.
Patrick Willis should be a Hall of Fame player, so we'll see.
Now, will the same thing that worked against Bocelli work against Patrick Willis in that he had a much shorter career than a lot of people?
I think he played a pretty good amount.
Did he have a short career? I wish I could tell you that.
I thought he retired somewhat young.
I got the impression that when he was on the 49ers, they weren't as good. He was on some bad – of all those great 49ers teams, I felt like he was on some that weren't good teams. But anyway, I think he should be in.
Yeah, he did. I think he played like eight seasons, but he's a five-time first team All-Pro.
Yeah, that's very similar to Bocelli.
Yeah.
To your point, Lauren, that's very similar. So maybe you're right. Maybe it will work against him. But the guy, Jared Allen's going to the Hall of Fame. I think Darrell Revis and Joe Thomas are going this year. So that's two guys I think that are going this year. After that, I get the hunch that Fred's in play with these guys. Now, whether or not he gets in ahead of them, I don't know, but I do get the hunch that Fred's in play. I can't find anybody that I'm convinced is going in before. I think Jared Allen goes in, but I'm not convinced he goes in before Fred. I think Dwight Freeney goes in, but I'm not convinced he goes in before Fred. So I would say other than Revis and Joe Thomas, I don't know that there's anybody on this list for me that I'm 100%, and I think it's what you just said, that I'm 100% convinced go in before him.
Yeah, I would agree. It seems like this will be a year where you see at least one receiver, if not two, get in because there's just such a logjam there. Is it Andre Johnson? Is it Torrey Holt? I think you're going to see some sort of swelling of support for one, if not two, of these guys. Steve Smith, you know, is going to have a case. I like Hines Ward too, but I don't think his numbers are quite there with where they need to be. But I think at some point Hines Ward should get in.
He'll go in.
But he's one of the toughest receivers to ever play.
But
so to me, that's got to account for something.
Hines Ward's an interesting case study. He wasn't nearly the talented player that Fred Taylor was. Talent night and day, but he played on a way more successful team. Because
bigger market.
Much better football market. And he had something. Everyone remembered the blocking, the toughness, all that. He had this reputation of being this tough guy. So he had as a calling card. Now, Fred's got a calling card too, but that's what helps him. But he damn sure shouldn't be in ahead of Fred Taylor, in my opinion. And I would be a little bit surprised if he goes in before him. But I agree with you. I think at some point, I think Fred's going in at some point. And I think Hines Ward is going in at some point too. But the only guys, I think Revis and Joe Thomas are the only two on this list that I am relatively convinced will get more votes than Fred Taylor this year. So if that's how I feel, I think there's a chance it's this year.
That'd be great. I mean, I certainly believe that when voters really look at the numbers and where Fred ranks and again, how electric he was as a runner. Yeah, I mean, it certainly could be. I'm certainly not dismissing it. I mean, look, I think there's two locks, and then I think there's three guys that it's really hard to differentiate which ones should get in this year. So I think this will be a good litmus test for us. I think when we start to hear about how the meeting went and the momentum, I think we'll start to have an idea for Fred. If it isn't this year, is it 2 years?
Yeah.
Is it 6 years? That sort of thing. And obviously we'll see the first thing will be when this list gets cut.
Is there a chance that some of the media voters go, all right, Jacksonville, we just gave you your guy, so give us a minute. Is that a chance?
You know what?
Or is there a chance that happens?
You know what? That should never be in play, but it's a good question. It's a good question.
Because we've been hammering that. I say we, but
but there's
the Jaguars contingent.
But an extension of your thought is there enough snobbery on the committee? And I'm not saying there is. I don't pretend to know a lot of them.
Right.
That they say the last thing we're going to do is put two Jaguars in back to back. Is it? That's your question.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know that. Number one, I don't know the answer to that. I'd be disingenuous if I didn't tell you that worried me a little bit. Maybe that's my Jacksonville inferiority complex coming out. But yeah, I'd be lying if I said that didn't worry me a bit.
Yeah, I would be surprised if it's this year. Could I see it and would I love it? Yes, but I would be surprised if it's this year.
I don't expect that it is.
Yeah, my guess is you're going to see it be Thomas, Revis, and then you're probably going to see at least one receiver. Torrey Holt, I would say, is probably the one that should go in next. I think Patrick Willis will have a lot of support because he was just such a dominant player. And probably, look, I mean, DeMarcus Ware has an unbelievable amount of sacks. He's won a Super Bowl. Dwight Freeney is somebody that I think has a good chance this year. So I would think it's probably not this year for Fred, but I do think it is close. And again, it'll be interesting to see when like Pete joins us, because everybody, to your point, everybody was telling Pete, he shared with us, hey, you can leave us alone now. We got your guy in, Tony's in.
Right.
And he was like, no, I'm not. And now I'm going to get Fred in.
Right.
And so there probably is some of that mentality of Baselli just went in. So we can focus on, some of these other franchises.
We'll take a break. When we come back, I'm going to get it to Florida State football. Thoughts about the Noles after this.
I mean, it's just it's the passion, the intensity, the pageantry of it, really. I mean, it's all of it. And I mean, I'm a fan of college football. And you can't speak of great rivalries without mentioning this one.
If you want a success story, it's that Seminole season this year. They've won. They're on their way. I think they're going to win Friday. They're on their way to a 9-win season. I'm so confident in them, fearful of them with my Gator hat on, but confident of what they've become, that I'm confident they're going to win a bowl game, and I've got no idea who they're playing. Now, Hayes, you made the point yesterday, and it's a good one. We don't completely know how good they'll be against better rosters because the ACC is not good this year. It's not as good as it's been. I saw somebody sent me a strength of schedule thing the other day, and Florida's and FSU's strengths of schedules aren't far apart, according to one metric, but who knows until you start playing teams in other leagues. But it's been a fantastic season. The numbers, Jordan Travis has completed 65% of his passes, 21 touchdowns, and 4 interceptions. I mean, he's been very good. He's not running a lot. He's only run for 284 yards, which is I would have thought more. But one of the reasons they've got those 3 terrific backs. Trey Benson's a really good back. Why Oregon let him get away, you never know. Trayshawn Ward, the former walk-on's a good back. Lawrence Toafili, who's their third back, is a good back. All are averaging almost 5 yards a carry or more. Trey Benson's averaging 7 yards a carry and almost 900 yards. And that's having to split it up with 2 other guys. So they've had a fantastic season. You can slowly sense momentum. They just got they just flipped an Ohio State quarterback commit. Brock Glenn, I think his name is, mm-hmm. a 4-star, which gives them 2 quarterbacks now coming in next year. A.J. Duffy's already there. So you can sense momentum. It's a very slow momentum. It almost seems like Florida and Miami had momentum the minute they hired their coaches. You know what I mean? The minute Napier and Mario Cristobal signed on the dotted line, boom, they had momentum. And FSU had none. And FSU needed a season to gain that momentum. But you sense it coming every time they beat somebody and every time they win again. You sense that momentum coming for the Noles, and I do sense it coming. But having said that, I think with it comes real pressure in this game. Because if you're having a mediocre season and you were going to win 6 or 7 games and you've had an upset loss somewhere along the line, and then if you don't beat Florida – you weren't necessarily expected to because they've had the better program the last 4 or 5 years. But now that you've been blowing people out left and right, that your 3 losses were lumped together but haven't had one in a while, you haven't lost in a month, you've rushed for over 200 yards 6 games in a row, and you're about to play a team that doesn't stop the run well at all, I now think if you lose to Florida, you've now lost some of that goodwill. So I think it's a gigantic game for the Seminoles.
It is monumental. You've got a coach that if he loses, he's 16-17 at your school. I think you come in at 8-4. You know, losses to Wake Forest, who's 7-4. NC State, 7-4. You know, I mean, there's not a lot. The LSU game was a great win. You know, Clemson pretty – not easily, but Clemson, I'd say, won. Florida State had an onside kick with, like, a couple seconds left.
Right.
But, you know, I don't think that there would be a lot to feel great about because I think the schedule has been – I think it's been a down year for the ACC. I think they've caught teams at the right time, which isn't – that's not their fault. I mean, you know, Florida State's taken advantage, and they have killed these teams. And you know, I give them full credit for that. They have not had any squeakers. They have gone out and looked like Tyson in the 80s knocking out Spinks and the litany of guys that he put away in the first round. And Florida's going to have to sustain that. The challenge Mike Norvell is going to have now is Florida State in the next college football playoff rankings that come out, I believe, tonight, correct?
At 7 o'clock, yep.
Yeah. Okay, that ranking is going to have Florida State pretty close to thinking New Year's Six. So now the conversation transitions from don't just beat Florida, embarrass Florida, to do you think we can get into the New Year's Six because this is now our ranking and what do we need? And it just takes your mind off of what it needs to be on, which is Friday night and knocking out an average Florida team. And Florida State should be able to do that. But I do think it is much more of a challenging mental game for Mike Norvell this week than it is for Billy Napier. All Billy Napier's players are hearing is how awful they are, which I think they're going to take ownership of. And Billy Napier's not on his way out the door. So this is not a team that's going to cash in their chips. Like, whoever plays Friday night for the Gators is completely bought into Billy Napier. So it makes Florida dangerous because what are the odds that they're going to lay 2 eggs in consecutive Saturdays? That it just probably isn't going to happen. Florida's probably going to play one of the better games that they've played this season. Now, that may not be enough to beat Florida State, but if Florida State isn't what we think they are, they can absolutely lose Friday night.
Yeah, you're not convinced two things. I'm reading from you, and I won't put words in your mouth. A, you're not quite as sold on Florida State season as I think I am. And B, you're not convinced they win Friday night, are you? I don't want to put words in your mouth.
I'm not convinced they win Friday night, and I don't think that their 11 games has been against. I don't think it's nearly as battle tested as what Florida has gone through.
Yeah,
I just don't. I think the ACC. The reason that Syracuse has won six games is because they play in the ACC. If Syracuse played in the SEC, they'd have won probably one or two games. I can go down Wake Forest, NC State, Louisville. Who else? Georgia Tech they played. I don't. Who else did they play in that division? Miami. I mean, come on.
They didn't play Vanderbilt.
Miami is 5-6.
Yeah.
We've seen Miami. What would Miami be with an 8-game SEC schedule?
Lauren, my counter to that is I'm turning into FSU guy, but my counter to that, they have beat all those mediocre teams the same way Georgia would have beat them. 45-3, 41-12. I think if Georgia had played those teams, the score would be similar. I'm not saying they're as good as Georgia.
Yeah, and that's a good point. And I'm not trying to sell anybody that Florida is good. Florida's not good. Yeah. Florida is an average team.
Right.
But I don't look at this as average versus elite. I might be wrong. Yeah. Maybe Florida State is elite, and they'll kill Florida, and they'll kill whoever they play in the bowl game. My thing, I see this game as it's average versus, I think, good. And I don't think in this day and age of college football, I don't think those two are light years apart.
Hayes sees it average versus good. I see it average with no momentum, bad traction, a lot of question, versus good with incredible momentum and everything clicking and everybody on the same page, which makes good a little better than good and makes average a little worse than average. And that's why. So I agree with you, average versus good, but I think average is going to play worse than average because of how they've been playing. I think good is going to play better than good. So I'm convinced FSU is going to beat them. But moreover, I'm convinced this is a really good season for FSU. I think he's gotten every drop out of that team. I think they've gained the momentum that I wasn't sure they would have. And that they're again, I don't think it's an accident that a four-star that was going to Ohio State flipped to FSU. That's a big deal. If that happened to Florida, we'd be cartwheeling in here. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I think they do have that momentum.
FSU certainly has been gaining momentum ever since the three losses, and they do run the football really well. And not having Ventrell Miller in the first half should scare Florida fans. And likewise, if you're Mike Norvell, you should be thrilled that you're getting to attack that defense without its leader.
Yeah.
But I think we just spent a whole segment talking about Anthony Richardson. If Anthony Richardson is drafted anywhere in the first two rounds, it's because he does pose an incredible threat against defenses. And if he is able to play a really good game, which we've seen him do, then that's where I think they're neck and neck, because I still think Florida along the offensive line, the defensive line, maybe not defensive line as much, but the offensive line, I think Florida's offensive line can push FSU's defensive line around.
I am convinced FSU is going to beat Florida. Sure. Hayes is not. Where are you?
I'm not convinced.
Okay. I'm not convinced they're going to roll them. To your point, the rosters aren't all that different. The levels of athleticism and traits of the quarterbacks aren't all that different. So I'm not convinced it's 45-10. I think if Florida plays a really good game, they can make it a good game. But I would be wonderfully, pleasantly shocked if Florida won, but shocked.
The other thing that I've been seeing with this Florida State season is it's almost like the two-year-old that, like, is learning to take its first steps or going to the bathroom on its own, and it's like you give them the, yay, that's so good, I'm so proud of you. It kind of feels that way a little bit to me about this Florida State season, because they have been so dreadful for so many years now, and they are certainly showing signs of coming out of that. But I think, again, just to mention the recruit that they just got from Ohio State, yes, he's a four-star. He's the number 378th overall player in the country.
Well, yeah, my point is
it seems like that's been the story of FSU. Is like no one talks about great teams, they don't lose three in a row. That I can tell you right now in college football. They're not a great team because you don't lose three in a row. And I get it. They had some injured players. They're going to be able to play Friday night. I understand all that. I just don't think that they've really, what are the statement wins here that we're talking about?
LSU.
Okay, in the opener.
That beat you 45-35.
Okay, that's one game.
Well, you can't
out of 11.
But Frank, you
and
can't,
it was in the opening
control,
game.
But you can't control when you play them. They still beat LSU. We're not imagining that happen, Hayes.
I'm not suggesting that it didn't happen, Gibby.
But
coming
what's
out
the
of the bye week,
that's a statement win for Florida State. Is it?
It
not,
It wasn't
Frank?
At the time,
but it still is.
It's a better win as the season has gone on, yes. But coming out of the bye after losing three in a row, somehow to an NC State team that didn't even have its starting quarterback for the second half, they've beaten Georgia Tech, who was terrible and didn't have its quarterback. They've beaten Miami, who is terrible and didn't have its quarterback, really.
Yeah.
And they then beat Syracuse.
How's Vanderbilt?
Gibby. Let me finish, Gibby.
Gibby, okay. I'm not trying to sell you that Florida is good. I don't think Florida is good. I think Florida is average, just like I think South Carolina is average, which is why they could go to the swamp and get embarrassed and 7 days later put 63 up on Tennessee. And I think Florida and Florida State are not that far apart because I just don't think Florida State, and again, to let me go through it, so they play Syracuse, who just gets Schrader back. Then you play Louisiana Lafayette, who's lost five games. I just, to me, there's not, like, you would think for what how people talk about Florida State that there would be victories over the 16th ranked team in the country. I'm not asking you to go and beat Georgia, but there should be, I think, more on the bone than, well, we beat LSU in the first game that Brian Kelly ever coached.
Yeah, and I'll go the other way on you. I think the LSU game does count. I think
it counts.
But I think, I mean, Georgia beat Oregon in the first game Dan Lanning had ever coached. Also with a transfer quarterback like Brian Kelly had. I think that's a good win for them. I think the last four games, again, 41-16, 45-3, 38-3, 49-17, those weren't good opponents. I agree with that. But I think that's about the way Georgia would have beaten them. I think that's about the way Michigan would have beaten them. I think they beat those teams the same way the great teams would have beaten them. They had the stretch in the middle of the season wasn't a very good stretch. Listen, I've become a Seminole guy here. I hope Florida be well. You give you sound annoyed. I'm not annoyed. I'm just disagreeing. You say you sound bowed up a little bit.
No, I mean I'm just trying to say that if I'm a Florida State fan, I'm sitting here thinking, well, wait a second. Yeah. We've had some solid wins this year.
They've had a solid one.
Yeah. But
LSU wasn't ranked.
Well, no, I disagree. I think 41-16, 45-3, 38-3, and 49-17 are all solid wins. I don't care who you're playing. You're going to beat the teams you play. So I think those are all solid wins. I think if they had beaten Georgia Tech 17-16 on a field goal, that wasn't a solid win. I think 41-16, 45-3, 38-3 are solid. I think those are solid. So for me, those are solid wins. That's why I think they've got a really good team. But we'll see.
They're solid wins over some teams without their starting quarterback, but they're not statement wins. That's
well,
the whole point.
Again, you can only beat the teams you play. They didn't play well in the middle of the season. Look, I think – if Georgia played FSU right now, I think Georgia would beat FSU 35-20. That's what I think. I think if Georgia played FSU right now, they'd beat them 35-20. I think if Georgia played Florida right now, they'd beat them 42-10. And I think that's the difference in these two teams. I think Georgia would beat one of them by two touchdowns, and Georgia would beat the other one by three touchdowns. And I think FSU is a touchdown to two touchdowns better. But I love this because I love that FSU-Florida – when's the last time we've had a good FSU-Florida conversation? For 4 or 5 years, Florida was clearly better. For all the years before that, FSU was clearly better. This is awesome that we have a disagreement about Florida FSU. Now I can't wait to see. You know what I mean? I can't. The game's gained some intrigue for me just with this conversation.
And Florida State is better. I just don't think it's roll the ball out and beat Florida better.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Let's take a break. More in a moment. 10 Tennessee on 92.5 FM. You know who I like? Lane Kiffin. How'd you describe it at the top of the program? He's gone from the villain.
Yeah. Most lovable coach in the game. Well, certainly one of them.
So the Mississippi State TV guy, whatever his name is, John something or other, right? Reports that sources say Lane Kiffin is going to resign Friday and take the Auburn job, right? And this is a Mississippi State. It's a Starkville TV guy, right? I think it's a Starkville TV guy. Okay.
Sokoloff?
Yeah, I guess. Isn't he a Starkville guy? It's John.
Kiffin made it seem like he is because when he did his thing, he had him leaving John the Starkville
station. So first of all, Kiffin quote tweets him and says, "That's news to me, John," which is freaking awesome. I mean, isn't that awesome? Mm-hmm. Rather than have a press conference to talk about how mad you are at the guy, how tremendous is that? Sources tell me Hayes Carline is leaving for WOOO in Tulsa. And Hayes quote tweets, "That's news to me. That's fantastic, isn't it?"
Yeah. I'm glad Twitter's still alive for us to be able to have this.
But I mean, think about this. I mean,
62,000 people liked Lane's tweet.
Isn't that the best answer? The best answer is to comically quote tweet the guy and say it's news to me. And then he had fun, and then he said, then Lane tweeted this: "Breaking news: John Sokoloff of WCBI News in Starkville, Mississippi, plans to step down as lead anchor and head to WLOX to become their new lead anchor. Sources say WLOX hasn't offered the job to anyone yet." I think it's tremendous.
John to WLOX is happening. Story soon.
And then Barrett Salee.
That's exactly how he did it.
And then I think Barrett Salee made the best point of all. He said, "Make what you want of the Lane Kiffin to Auburn story, but it isn't happening Friday before Cadillac Williams gets to coach them against Alabama." Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the best. I mean, Cadillac is the ultimate Auburn guy, and they have fallen in love with him. Now, it would be a mistake to give him the job because he's not experienced enough. He can't get the job, can he?
I don't think so.
What do you think? Can Cadillac get the job?
I think he could.
You think so?
Yeah, I think he could.
What
if Auburn beats Alabama? You don't give it to him?
No, I don't. Okay. I don't. I'll tell you this.
There could be a mandate to keep him on staff.
Yeah, correct. Not only that,
with the new coach.
And I think one day he may be a fantastic head coach and probably needs to go be a head coach somewhere else. But I don't think Auburn can hire a guy that has very little coaching experience and no head coaching experience. I don't think he had coordinator experience, did he?
It's the same reason why I don't think the Colts are going to hire Jeff Saturday, no matter how the final stretch goes for them.
Right. And now,
I mean,
with that guy, you never know. But yeah, you're right. So, but the point is, I don't think he can get it. Kiffin's phenomenal, by the way. If I told you right now. That Billy Napier is going to shock the world and go coach the Seahawks, which is not a pro guy, but for the sake of the conversation. And you were shocked, and everybody's shocked because the recruiting's going great and blah, blah, blah. But if I told you Lane Kiffin was coming, how would you feel? Are you still upset Napier's gone? I'm not saying would you rather have him than Napier.
Oh, I'd be.
But if Napier's gone, if you knew you couldn't have Napier suddenly. If Nick Saban retired tomorrow,
Lane Kiffin would be a very soft landing for the Gators.
If Nick Saban quits after the Auburn game and Napier got the job 2 days later, okay, and I told you you're getting Lane Kiffin, you'd still be disappointed Napier's gone. We all would, but how would you feel?
Golden.
How about you?
Like, this coach has the most personality that Florida's had since Steve Spurrier.
That you'd be happy he'd be your guy.
Yeah.
If Mike Norvell left tomorrow to go coach UCLA because Chip Kelly got out of it, and FSU fans learned a day later they were getting Lane Kiffin, I think there'd be a party for a week in Tallahassee, don't you?
There should be, yes.
Okay, hang on. If Kirby Smart shocked the world and is going to coach the Carolina Panthers, we never thought Kirby's an NFL guy. Yeah, I know. I know I said that, but I've just won back-to-back titles. And, you know, I've done all I can do at Georgia, and I've always had more interest in the NFL than people think, and it's still in the South, and we're going to Carolina. If that happened on January 15th, and you could tell Georgia fans you're getting Lane Kiffin, how are they feeling?
I think they're disappointed.
No.
Right.
They're devastated.
I think they'd rather have somebody other than Lane. I'm not sure who that would be.
Again, they'd be devastated they lost Kirby. Right. And by the way, they're not losing Kirby. He's going to be there next 20 years. I'm not saying that, Georgia fans. We're having a conversation. Georgia fan, once they're over the devastation of losing their best coach of all time, if you told them it was Lane.
I think you have to say there would be devastation losing Kirby Smart.
Yeah, and they're two
but once you got beyond that,
yeah.
And 4 days later they made the hire and you'd had some time to process Kirby leaving, I think Lane Kiffin would be a great hire.
That's where I'm going with this is.
I think he's too silly for Georgia.
And that's my question is.
Florida's had a little bit of silly in Spurrier.
Good point.
That's not how Georgia does it.
Yeah, very good point. Which is why I think Lane to Alabama wouldn't make sense.
Right.
But Georgia, I don't know. But I hear you. The point where I'm going with that's a really good point. Where I'm going with this is there almost any program in the country, the 131 of them, any of them, that if they lost their guy and they got beyond the devastation of losing their guy, because the good teams would be devastated if they lost their guy. But once you got beyond the devastation of losing your guy, is there anybody that would be unhappy that they landed Lane Kiffin? Almost none, right?
Yeah, I mean, just USC, because they had him.
Yeah, yeah.
And other than that.
USC, okay, okay. Good
Tennessee.
Point. Oh, I
think Tennessee would take him back.
Oh, okay. My God. Yeah. Again, hopefully Tennessee hopes they have their guy forever.
Right.
But again, we're saying in the event that you're shockingly lost your guy, I can't think. USC's a good point. But I can't imagine there's many schools.
I mean, if you're Texas and you fire Sark.
I think they'd be thrilled.
They'd be thrilled to get Kiffin.
I think Clemson? They'd be thrilled.
Yeah, again, I think again, so. I mean, once you get beyond
sure.
Because Dabo's got a little silly in him, too. It's a different kind of silly, you know? So I got to believe, again, don't get me wrong. If Ryan Day left, Ohio State's devastated. If Kirby left, Georgia's devastated. When Nick leaves, Alabama's going to be devastated. That's not the conversation. The conversation is once it's happened, and now you got to go find a coach somewhere. How many guys right now would a team rather have that it could have than Lane Kiffin? I mean, Texas isn't getting Lincoln Riley to come, okay?
Right. And if you're Texas A&M, wouldn't you love to fire Jimbo Fisher and hire Lane Kiffin if you could get out of the $90 million?
Yeah. I don't know if Ohio State would hire Lane. They're another program that I think...
you got to figure the geography part, too.
The other thing, too, that plays into this is, who else is out there?
Well,
that's part of it, too. That's part of the whole conversation.
Right. I mean, who is he competing against? There's very few quality candidates out there that would have the resume Lane Kiffin has.
Yeah, I just think the whole point of the segment, he's gone from a little bit of a joke to maybe the most sought after coach in America. Think about that. If not the most sought after, certainly on the ballot. There's no debate he's on the ballot. Now, if I'm Auburn, I still would rather have Hugh Freeze, because I think Hugh Freeze might be even a better coach than Lane Kiffin. I'm not sure Lane Kiffin's doing this at Liberty. Okay, I'm not. When Lane Kiffin was at FAU, they weren't what Liberty is. FAU is the same as Liberty, right? And Lane never made FAU what Hugh Freeze has made Liberty. So for me, if I'm Auburn, Hugh Freeze is still position A for me. I wouldn't even think twice about it.
Well, and we talk about in the past Matt Campbell and how he would have been the guy that would be rising up these boards, but the problem is, Iowa State's 4-7 this year.
Yeah.
And they could beat TCU to finish the season. I doubt that.
But they're probably not going to.
They're 1-7 in league play.
Yeah. Right. And so now you have this guy that you thought, and maybe you put PJ Fleck in the same conversation. Yeah. You thought those were the guys that were on that next tier, but now that their programs aren't doing as well, you take them off and now you're right back to
it's a great point.
Who
else? Matt Campbell probably fell off the hot guy list because of being 1-7 in the league.
Right. Is Deion Sanders not still a coach commodity?
He is.
Aren't they undefeated? I know it's Jackson State, but they're like 12-0.
Is he a commodity? Yeah. All right. Let me ask you, Gibby. You're not really a Georgia fan, but you got Georgia fans in your family,
right?
If Kirby left tomorrow, would you want Deion? I'm asking you.
No.
Okay.
I would need to see that's the next level for Deion.
So you and just so you next, answered your own question.
Well, the next level, you know, I'm not asking if he's, you know, going to go to Georgia. I'm saying the next level for Deion's probably Mississippi State or something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, and I think he absolutely is a candidate for
or
that.
Or Arizona State or something like that. Because you don't jump from there to Georgia,
I think
right?
Colorado and USF being linked to Deion Jackson.
Yeah, you know, and I could see that. So to your question, I think Deion's going to get a job. I think he might get Georgia Tech.
That's the level
Georgia
I'm talking
Tech
about.
Tech should move mountains.
Yeah.
That's what I mean.
To get Deion Sanders.
Yeah, but as far as hottest guys for the big jobs, there's not a lot of competition for a guy like Lane Kiffin.
Any school that hires Lane Kiffin is going to get an A+ on all those dumb grade the hire stories that we see in the offseason. They just are.
Who doesn't love a good grade the hire
story? I like it too. You give me a good grade the hire story.
You give me the middle of January when it's cold. January's cold outside, and I had to put a wear jacket. And you give me a good grade the hire story. Yeah. Not a good day.
Isn't any school getting an A for hiring Lane Kiffin?
And that's the point. That's how much it's changed. Because 2 years ago, they would get a B- because people point out the good and the silly,
right.
The good and the bad, the good and the irresponsible. He's almost gone from his kind of silly tweets have gone from irresponsible to funny to appropriate. I thought the one he sent to the Mississippi State guy was appropriate. Didn't you think
that? Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I loved it. So
I think it's good news for a lot of people. you can rehab your image. It just takes some time.
Yeah.
So if you've had, you know, if you've suffered, whether it's Matt Rhule, who just was terrible at the Panthers, you can rehab it.
Now, I got a buddy of mine who just is a diehard Georgia fan and diehard fan. And he told me if that happened, obviously they'd all be devastated. He said Hugh Freeze. Isn't that interesting? He said Hugh Freeze. But I think Hugh Freeze is a better coach than Lane. I think Hugh Freeze, look out if he gets another crack. I mean, what he's doing at Liberty, look out if that son of a guy gets. I really believe that. You know what Alabama doesn't want? Can I tell you what Alabama doesn't want? Is Auburn hiring Hugh Freeze. If I'm Alabama fans aren't afraid of much, nor should they be. They've proven they don't need to be afraid of much. Don't get me wrong, Alabama fan. I respect you. You don't need to be afraid of hardly anything. But if you're an Alabama fan, you don't want Hugh Freeze popping up in Auburn, do you?
No.
No, I mean, I mean,
he beat him a couple times when he was at Ole Miss.
And he's proven what he can do. So we'll see. I'll take a break. When we come back, you're going to take an hour off?
I'm going to go eat some more food.
Is there any pie left?
There is pie left. It's all for you.
I'm coming off the edge. You can chip me. You can leave a tight end in.
I'll be surprised if it's there.
You can leave a fullback in.
But I'm
swim moving LT is what I'm doing. So Denny Thompson joins us to talk quarterbacks after this. It's 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
Now, the quarterback whisperer, Denny Thompson.
Okay, bring it in.
Brought to you by Tyson Sound and Security. Security and automation experts.
1, 2, 3.
Welcome back to the program. I mean, if I was going to have another kid, I'd name him Whisperer Frangie. You know what, Art? What do you think? You think that?
I'll give you the name.
No middle name?
You can have it. That's why you were off last week?
Yeah. A little kid.
Grinding up for this moment.
Yeah, and I will say, now I'm 64. Sonny Bono had a kid like at 61.
Yeah, Charlie Chaplin had a kid in his like late 70s.
So I got time.
You got plenty of time.
Okay, there's time.
I don't think you do.
Yeah. Well, you got.
I'm not a doctor, but
yeah, and there are things. If some of these things are reversible too, you got to have that conversation. I've never asked that question either. So,
well, I think the biggest problem is you got to find someone to have said kid. Like,
my wife would say I'm not. Nah,
I think that's your problem.
Good. Frank, we're good.
It's not your issue.
Denny Thompson's here. All right, serious issue. Okay, we've got a lot of serious issues to talk about. But obviously, Marcus Stokes has been in the news. The TV did a story about it. We all know by now that Florida rescinded the offer to Marcus after the video came out when he was singing a song along with the radio that had a racial epithet in it. Tell us what you can, your take on this. How do you see this whole thing unfolding, and give us your thoughts on it?
It's still so new. I don't know how it's going to unfold. This is it's a tough one, man. It's heartbreaking. And regardless of what the severity of it is, I don't think anybody would argue that it's heartbreaking. It's a 17-year-old who was in his dream situation, made a mistake, and is paying a huge price for that mistake. So, I mean, I think, you know, this week I spent a lot of time with Marcus, and it's just, at the end of the day, man, these are kids, and that doesn't excuse a mistake, but what it does do is it means that you really have to be there for them with this, because in their mind, the world is over. It's done, right? Like, once it hit TMZ and Fox News yesterday and New York Post, you know, it went to a whole nother level. And so I've seen the messages to him. I've seen that stuff. And so I don't really care about his football future right now. I want him to get through this next month because it will pass. Mm-hmm. And here's your options. It can never come up again because you let this define you, or you're so great that it continually comes up and people continually try to knock you down with this, and you learn to live with it. But the great ones are going to see this, right? Like, it's just part of it. That's your two options. So which way are you going to go? And to Marcus's credit, yesterday morning, first one in the facility, probably the best session that he's had in a year. So we'll just kind of see how it plays out. I don't really have words for it other than it's truly heartbreaking for the kid. It's not a good situation for anybody.
No, it's not. And he did an excellent job with his apology. In terms of from the Florida side of it, I mean, is it something that you wish that they would have hung in there with them? Is it something that you kind of understand, you know, where they're coming from? What's that dynamic like? Because obviously we know you work real closely with them.
I think both of those things can be true. I think I wish both of them, right? I understand the need to move and rescind the scholarship. And I told them that. I completely get that. I don't know the decision I would have made because nobody's ever paid me $7 million to lead up an organization. And so I can sit here and I can sit on ivory tower and say, unless I would have worked with the kid, but I don't know that. I have no idea. But I do wish they would have let this play out. Even if their intention was to still rescind the scholarship, I wish it had let it just die down a little bit before, you know, we had to make that a public type of thing. But again, I'm not going to judge their reaction the same way that I don't judge how people get offended by things. But I will say that 100% of my concern right now is on Marcus Stokes, the young man,
yeah.
Not Marcus Stokes, the football player. Yeah. Marcus Stokes, the football player, is going to be fine. Marcus Stokes, the young man, is who we got to rally around right now.
You know, I will tell you, so I don't want to say anything now that I didn't say yesterday. So here's my take on it. I'll say what I said yesterday. My guess is, I don't know him, but I know you awfully well, and I know what you think of him. My guess is he is a good kid. My guess is he is not a racist. Mm-hmm. My guess is his heart is breaking, and I hate it for him. I don't know that, in my opinion, Danny, Florida had much choice, because once there's the perception, even if it's totally erroneous, once there's the perception that there's something racial in your program, it's hard. It's hard maybe if it offends anybody in your program. It's hard when you get beat up on the recruiting trail, when other people say stuff. People negative recruit. People think you don't write negative recruit. It's a bunch of crap. Everybody's out there negative recruiting. You know it and I know it. So I don't know that Florida had much choice in this to make the decision they did. Having said that, I hope, and I don't know how you do this, but there are people, this is just my opinion, talk show host, so what do I know? But there are people that have ill intent and judgmental, racist, racial feelings. They're bad people.
Mm-hmm.
They are. They're bad people. There's also people that are clowning around with a song or whatever that don't have those feelings. They just were singing a song. And I hope people can discern the difference. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because I think there is a big difference between bad racist people, and there are some bad racist people in the world, and it's naive to suggest that there's not. But I hope people can tell the difference between somebody that's that and somebody that's a young guy that was singing along to a song and did something that wasn't very smart.
And I think based on the reaction and the support that he's gotten, not just from people close to him, but other recruits at the University of Florida and other recruits everywhere. I mean, I've seen the DMs he's gotten. People know that.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's – I don't think he even is feeling like people think he's racist. I think that people have differentiated that. And I also agree that I don't know that there's another way that Florida could have gone with this.
Yeah.
And hindsight's 20/20, but it feels like it didn't have to happen this way. I guess this is not a new video.
Yeah. Let's, a coach, by the way. I get that.
Let's establish that for a second. This is not something that happened last week.
Right.
This video happened in like April or May. Okay.
Oh really?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So this video on a local level has actually made its rounds at different high schools and stuff like that.
I didn't know that.
And so we've been talking about this video. And so it was one of those things where every time it would make its rounds, it just didn't get anywhere, right? It just kind of stayed. And so I think there was a certain part of us that just went, okay, we're good. Right. And so when it went to the extent it went Friday, I think it just paralyzed everybody. And it was like, this was the fear, you know, that maybe we had kind of gotten past. And it was a stupid, stupid mistake. And those kids paying for it now.
There's a segment of people that wonder, Jaden Rashada, how much of him deciding to attend Florida, did that factor into Florida's decision to you know, make this move with Marcus, in your opinion?
I can only go by what they tell me, and they tell me no. So I'm going to choose to believe them. I'm going to choose to trust them in that. But, I mean, I think the question is always in this world we're living in is, okay, well, if this was Arch Manning, what would you have done?
Yeah. Yeah, and
right. And that's not a fair question. That's not an excuse.
But I get it. I get it.
But I'm also not naive enough to go that maybe the two aren't interconnected. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, like, I believe that they're not, but I'm not that naive to not have that thought.
Yeah, you're 100% right. Listen, the optics are that many are going to, because of the optics, many are going to believe now that they had Rashada, they could run off Marcus and use this to do it.
Right.
That the optics suggest that.
Right.
I'm like you. I don't believe that. Mm-hmm. I don't know Billy Napier at all, but I know enough people that do, and I think he's a stand-up person, and I want to believe the coach at my alma mater is a stand-up person. So I don't believe that either. But I understand why the optics suggest it.
Right.
And so they do. Well, let's wrap this because we'll get to some other things. I hope this young guy gets a great school. He's obviously a very good player. If you're good enough to get offers from Penn State and Florida, he's going to get other offers. It may need to quiet a bit.
Right.
It may need to calm down a little bit. But I've told you all along, I think he's a really good player. Well before he committed to Florida.
Yeah.
Well, I told you 8 months ago, I think my untrained eyes tell me he's pretty good. And I mean, and he's what today's quarterback is. Smaller, mobile, athletic, kind of has a charismatic, dynamic playing style. I bet he turns out okay.
The last thing I'll say on this, he learned a lesson. He's learned lesson learned.
Yeah.
I have zero doubt that this kid's about to write an unbelievable story.
Yeah.
And not out of spite. There's no hate towards any. Right. Like, it's not like, I'm going to go somewhere and beat Florida. That's not it.
Yeah.
It's just he had to grow up quickly, and now he's got a decision to make, and you get to author your own story. So the rebound is what it is.
Well said. Very well said. We'll take a break. Let's talk Anthony Richardson. We're going to talk about Trevor. I want your thoughts on Lamar Jackson. We got a lot of quarterback talks coming up. Stay with us. This is Denny Thompson talking quarterbacks with Frank and Hayes and Gibby on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Richardson gets the snap off, drops back to throw, looking, Hail Mary for the back of the end zone.
He throws
it out of bounds past the end line. No chance for a catch. And the Gators lose at Vanderbilt 31-24. Vanderbilt beats Florida at home for the first time since 1988.
Florida loses. The odd thing about the game, Anthony Richardson threw for a bunch of yards. Denny, what everybody's asking is why didn't he run more? To his credit, he said today he just missed some reads. He said there's a lot of reads that if I'd have pulled it, I'm running all day. And I think he said I'd backpedal into the end zone. And I just made the wrong read. Is it that simple? Did he just make the wrong read? Because it seems to me he is reluctant to run the football. Watching for whatever reason, that's been my take for a month and a half.
Yeah, I don't really know the reason. I know that's not what everybody wants to hear, but
no, that's an honest answer.
The read thing. You can get into technicalities with anything you want to get into technicalities with this. So I don't like to do this, but technically he was right on the read. He should have handed it. Technically, it was a bad play call, if we want to be real.
Which one are we talking about?
On the goal line.
Oh, okay.
All right. Or in, what were they, on the 3-4, yeah. Something like that. But, I mean, the box was stacked against him from jump. Like, that should have been formationed out or checked out or something along those lines. But, yes, there's a part of forget the read, and I was telling you guys this at the break. Let's throw the reads out for a second. And there's a part of you that has to have that amount of dog in you that you go, I'm out here, it's 25 degrees, we're playing freaking Vanderbilt, I'm the biggest guy on the field, I'm the best athlete on the field, we're going to score. And so I don't even care what you call, I'm keeping this ball, right? I don't know why that didn't kick in, because it has kicked in at other times in this year. So I don't know the for sure answer, but I don't disagree with everybody saying he should have pulled one or two of those. I don't think it was as egregious as what people think, but at the end of the day, if you're going to be an alpha dog 100% of the time, right? And if you have the ability to take over a game, having that ability doesn't do you any good if you don't do it, right? So that's the thing. I hope we see Friday night. I hope we see a different one.
Gibby played the final play of the game. Any thought as to why the Hail Mary was so far beyond where it should have been?
No, I didn't. I've talked to Ann a couple times. I didn't ask him about that. Like, he knows. Yeah. He knows he messed that up. There's no reason for me to ask him about that. I have no idea. Probably just a brain. Yeah. I almost said something else, but y'all know what I mean.
Yeah, I hear you. He overthrew it.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, I want to say everything to you that I said before you were here. I made the comparison to Jeff Driskel earlier in the program. I've interviewed Jeff a bunch, and I think there's a lot of similarities. Jeff's a great kid. Do you know Jeff Driskel at all?
No, uh-huh. Okay.
No. You remember him at Florida.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
6'4", 230, one of the fastest kids on the team. People didn't realize he's one of the fastest players on the mm-hmm. team.
He was a five-star, wasn't he?
Five-star. I've told this story before. We were coaching a Warriors team. I was running it, and our coaches were down there. We were playing in Kissimmee. He was playing for whatever Orlando team he was playing. He's from Orlando. He's from Hagerty, so wherever their team was. He had a blooper, Danny, and it was one of those that's going to drop in the Bermuda Triangle behind the second baseman, center fielder, right fielder, all go out, and they all look at each other. And the minute we know it's going to hit, we're thinking, well, that's a double, you know. It's a sure double no matter what. By the time our right fielder picked it up, he's halfway to third, okay?
Yeah.
He's unbelievably fast. So Jeff Driskel's unbelievably fast. But Jeff Driskel's a great kid, worked hard, good runner, threw a beautiful ball, but he didn't have a knack. There's a knack these great quarterbacks have to just instinctively know when to check down, when not to, when to come off a receiver, when to run, when not to. And that's what makes the great quarterback. And they can have the best trainer in the world, which I think you're a really good one. They can have the best play caller in the world, which is what Dan Mullen was. I think he's a really good one. They can have I don't know enough about Napier and their program now to know how good of coaches they are. But at some point, if you don't have that knack, if that's not who you are, it's going to be hard. And I worry that Anthony Richardson might not have that. And I hope I'm wrong, but that's my honest assessment. That if you don't have it, you're not trying to not have it.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
You just might not have it.
I think that's a fair observation. I think my personal opinion on this is that we're still seeing reps for the first time. We're still seeing situations for the first time. And we talk about this with Trevor all the time. There's comfort that comes with reps, mm-hmm. right? And so it's one of those things where it's like, I guarantee you if he gets in that same situation this week against Florida State, I bet he pulls it. Mm-hmm. And I bet Florida State's waiting on it, but I bet he still pulls it, right?
Right.
And I think it's one of those things where you just have to experience things and pain over and over and over again. And you have to watch film. I tell this to young kids all the time, and I tell it to their parents. If you're not watching film and thinking, what in the world was I thinking? Then you're watching it wrong.
Yeah.
You're not being objective about it. And I think, unfortunately, he's still getting those on a team that isn't strong enough to overcome those. They go as he goes, period. And that's a lot of pressure. And it makes those moments seem a lot bigger. Because if they score on that, we're not talking about it. If they run that ball in, we're not talking about it, right? But it makes those moments seem so much bigger because you know that every time that they have anything offensively good happen, 15 has to do it. And I just don't know that he's set up for success with that, either himself or through Florida or with those surrounding him.
This could be his last collegiate game. He's going to get in front of these NFL decision makers if he chooses to enter the draft. And they're looking for a face of the franchise. They're looking for a winner. Anthony, to my understanding, didn't win a ton in high school. Is that right?
He actually didn't play a ton.
Okay.
Like his senior year, he was hurt most of the year.
Okay.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't go well Friday night, even if it does go well, but he's 500 quarterback in college. Do you think it resonates with him how important it is for him Friday night to play one of the best games he's played as a Gator because of all of that, not wanting to go into the entire nation's going to be watched. It's in a primetime window.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly there's going to be a big spotlight on the game. Is that something that you think he's cognizant of?
Yeah. I don't think he looks at it that way. I think he looks at it as he missed an opportunity this past week that he don't want to miss again. I think that's probably more of the way he's looking at this. I know he's not looking at this as I got to do this, this, and this to get to Sundays. The one thing I'll give Anthony is Anthony's done a really good job of staying present this year. He's been through a lot of ups and downs, and it's been a crazy year for him. But through it all, he's been at every single practice. And if you talk to that staff, he's had the best practices he's had all year the last 3 weeks, 4 weeks. His attention to detail is better than it's ever been. So I don't think in any way, shape, or form he's checked out or he's even looking at necessarily what do I have to do to get drafted higher. God gave him what it takes to get drafted higher. Now it's just learn from that mistake. Learn from that. Learn from there's times where you just got to take over a game at this level, and let's just see if you can do it Friday night. Let's start there.
Final thought, and then we'll go to break. Then I want you to talk about Trevor, about Lamar Jackson, all that. And I said this earlier in the program too, I think once he gets to the workout season, once when the playing the game season ends and he gets to the workout season, it's going to be ridiculous.
Oh, it's going to be historically referenced when it comes to his workouts.
Yeah, I think he's going to run sub 4.44. I think he's going to run sub 4.4. I think he, however you measure velocity and all those things and release, I think it's going to be ridiculous. So the question is, will the tape hurt him enough that the workouts won't overcome it? Or is the tape fine and the workouts are going to thrust him into the first round? What is your guess on all that?
Oh, I think he's absolutely a first rounder.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Someone will take
it. Yeah, I think what we're talking about here is he 22nd or is he 5th?
I got you.
Right. I think that's what the tape is what it is. The tape is experience. And like I said, you can justify everything on tape. So when somebody's like, well, I watched the tape. Well, okay, you watched it through your eyes. Like, you didn't watch it through an objective eye, right? Yeah. So I'm guilty of that because I look for, okay, well, why did he make that decision? I think it's going to be his ability to explain his decision-making and his ability during that draft process to explain where he grew this year. And then it's going to be the medical. And those are the two things. If those two things check out and people are happy with those, there's not another person in this draft with the skill set. Yeah. So he's just got to ace those two things because he is going to run low 4.4s. He is going to throw a ball 80 yards. He is going to be dialed in on all that stuff. And we're going to put him in the environment to be dialed in. That's our job. He's going to pass that with flying colors.
Gino Toretta, I think I told you the story. No, I told Hayes the story. Gino Toretta, who's got the best eye for quarterbacks of anybody that I've worked with, did the Florida-Tennessee game and was down on the field talking to the coaches, talking to Shane, and saw him warm up and told me he's not seen whether it's, I don't want to get the phraseology wrong, but whether it's release, velocity, arm strength, he doesn't know that he's seen that in college football. Now, this guy won the Heisman Trophy. Mm-hmm. Okay, this guy has been around it his whole life. And he doesn't know that he's seen it. He does 15 college games a year, and he goes down on the field before every one of them. Because for 7 years I did them with
right,
him.
Okay? Right.
And so I think all that is there. So obviously, if you're right, then he's crazy. He's crazy to come back. Right?
Yeah.
He's crazy to do anything but get in that draft, go to those pro day, and go to the combine and have at it. Right.
Well, I think even if it was a situation like Jordan Travis has, where Jordan comes back. They're going to be a top 10 team because every weapon's coming back.
Right.
And they're good now.
Yeah.
Right. Then maybe. But I just don't know that he can improve his draft stock enough by coming back if the goal is to play on Sundays.
Take a break. When we come back, 1 segment to go with Denny. I want to talk about the Lamar Jackson. I want to talk about Trevor and a whole lot more. Stay with us. Dropping against a blitz. Trevor fires. That ball is going to be in the corner of the end zone, caught for the touchdown. Christian Kirk got both feet down, and the Jags score late in the half. Yeah, we'll talk about Trevor, the importance of a game when everybody watches him go against a good quarterback. Clearly held his own going head-to-head against Patrick Mahomes. Now, I know they're not on the field together, but you're playing in the same game, and you're quarterbacking one team, and he's quarterbacking the other. Now's another game like that. I made the comment earlier in the program, Denny. I think Lamar Jackson has changed the sport. Mm-hmm. The comment you made that is the best comment, and I wish I had made it before, is let's get rid of this pro style versus dual threat. They're just quarterbacks now because they all have to be mobile now and they all have to be able to throw now. Do you agree with me? Lamar Jackson has changed the way we look at quarterbacks. We allow them to be good runners too. We almost prefer them too. And yes or no, and then my second question is, why is he so good?
Well, I think he is – yeah, all these guys are elite athletes, but then – you guys have been to so many Jags practices. Y'all can back me up on this. It is so rare that you go to an NFL practice and somebody stands out because these guys are so good.
That's right.
When you see him move, he stands out. When you go to an NFL practice, you see Lamar Jackson, whether he's going full speed or 75%, he's different than everybody else on that field. And so he is just a whole other level of athletic that you don't see even at that highest level. But I think the thing that he's done a really good job is learning the game. Like, I don't I was never one that thought he can't play, because I saw him at Louisville and I saw how he threw the ball and I saw him under that offense and the reads he made. But I think now he's learning the NFL game and he's still struggling a little bit with the efficiency part. But he doesn't throw as many bad balls as he used to. And the ball comes out quicker than what it used to. He's going to come back to the pack if he ever goes to the point to where it's, I want to get through every progression before I run. So he knows he can't do that. But he's going 1-2 run. He's not like they're smart. They got rid of all the receivers. Right? So you have one option here, you have a tight end here, and if they're not open, Lamar, do what you do. And to me, that's just good coaching. And so he's doing what he's coached or asked to do, and he's doing it really, really well.
How do you think the Jags should try to defend him?
Pray for rain, essentially. Because that's the thing. There's nothing you can do with somebody that's just better than everybody else. Right? If he breaks contain or he gets to the second level, you're going to put your money on him that he's going to beat that one tackler. Right. And I don't know how you defend that. I think if I did, I'd be coaching in the NFL at this point. But they've got a good mixture of deep throws, timing throws, and him running the ball that keeps you just enough off balance.
They've evolved into more of a zone team.
Yes.
They've pretty much even said as much. The good thing about a zone team, among the other things, is you're watching the quarterback. We've all seen teams play cover zero straight man or cover one straight man, and everyone's got their back to the quarterback, and the quarterback runs for 50 yards. So being a zone team, if that's what they are becoming, that's got to help some, right?
No doubt. No doubt. And I think the Jags are pretty athletic at the safety position. I think the X factor, and he needs a good game, is Lloyd with this. I think if he is what everybody thinks he is, then on some level he should be able to spy, and not spy in the traditional sense that people think, but he should have some run responsibility with Lamar, and he should be able to track him from at least hash to hash, I would think. I think that's a good observation. You can't play man against him or you're in trouble.
What kind of matchup problems will the Ravens defense give Trevor in the passing game, do you think?
I don't really worry about the defense I'm glad you asked it like that, because I think Trevor's at the point, at least to me, where he's shown enough that if he's on, they got a chance in any game against any defense. And ETN is good enough that if the both of them are on, you can beat anybody. You can beat – when they get him that true number one receiver, guys, I'm excited. I mean, he has shown enough the last couple of weeks of getting the ball out in time. And, yeah, you take the stupid mistakes out. You take the goal line mistake out. You take the two-minute drill out, which the two-minute drill still concerns me. But if you take those out, this guy is a top 10 quarterback in the NFL right now. I believe that. And I got statistics to back me up, and I've got the eye test to back me up. The only thing is, this team hasn't executed at a high enough level to win football games. And he has wilted at times in pressure situations. But 90% of the game, this guy is a top 10 quarterback in the NFL right now.
The last time they played, they lost 27-17 to the Chiefs, to a game they were in most of the game. Patrick Mahomes, who I think is the best quarterback in the world, I think he's the best player in the league. I think he's the best football player in the league. He was 26 of 35 for 331 yards and 4 touchdowns and a pick. That's a great game. Trevor, in the same game, was 29 of 40 for 259 yards and 2 touchdowns. Not that different. Trevor ran for 26 yards. Mahomes ran for 39 yards. Mahomes was better. He's the best quarterback in the world, by the
right.
way.
Right.
But it wasn't a mismatch. I think in the court of public opinion, and even for his own self-esteem, playing that well in a game where you're playing against the best quarterback in the world, I think that matters. Did you agree with that?
I agree. You know where the mismatch would have come? Is if they each would have gotten the ball with a minute left in the game on the line.
Yeah, I agree.
Like I said, 90% of it, he is elite. Yeah. It's that 10% that makes you great, and he hasn't gotten that yet. That's where the separation between Josh Allen and Pat Mahomes, and not just Trevor, but the rest of the league.
Yeah.
It's that guy that gets the ball with 53 seconds left, and they're down by 4, and as a fan, you go, oh, they gave us too much time. We don't have that with Trevor, and that's what's keeping him from taking that next step.
Yeah, it's the difference between a guy who hits 30 home runs and a guy who hits 30 home runs but a bunch of walk-offs to win the game.
That's right.
That's the difference.
Yep.
It was a bye week in which I think we all got more appreciation for Trevor and the progress that he's shown because of Zach Wilson and just the other second-year quarterbacks, what are you seeing out of the guys in that draft class beyond Trevor?
Well, when we talk about the it factor, well, Zach Wilson showed what it is this week. The it factor continues after the game into the press conference, right? And Zach Wilson, to me, showed that he does not have the it factor at all, anywhere. I'd move on. And I was a huge Zach Wilson proponent. I love the way he throws a football. His teaching tape good. But that press conference, after that performance, you can't play. You can't play in that league. There's no way. Those are grown men making money. I thought Mac played pretty well, same conditions, and he was efficient. But Trevor's starting to separate himself, and I think that's what we all expected. And Trevor's separating himself on a team that had further to go than the rest of these guys.
Yeah, and fewer weapons, better weapons.
That's right.
Fewer around. Yeah, I'm glad you said that because Homer alert. I'm the worst homer. I've been the worst homer my whole life. I've had 36 years of radio homerism. But I
all 36.
All 36. but honest to God, I think he's going to be one of the best two or three quarterbacks in the NFL within two or three years. I haven't had one thing dissuade me from thinking how good Trevor Lawrence is and is going to be. Now, there's some things that, come on, Trevor, quit throwing the dumb interception. Quit throwing the what are you thinking throws. Quit overthrowing the open guy by 5 yards. I've seen that, but I think that stuff comes in time. I haven't seen one thing that tells me he's not going to be just magnificent. Not one thing.
I agree, and the only thing that I really want to see is I just want to see him take over.
Yeah.
I just want to see him take over a whole game. I know, and I don't – listen, this is going to come off wrong. I know that Jag fans and listeners and all that are frustrated with the record. I understand that. But I know what I'm watching, and I know this isn't last year's team, and I know this isn't the year before's team. This looks different. It feels different. That's progress, and once 16 gets all the way there, I think you're going to see a massive jump to a team that every single year is talked about as a playoff contender.
Yeah, I agree. It's going to be a lot of fun. But
do you agree with me on Trevor? By the way, I almost sound too homerish by saying I think he's going to be that good.
That he was going to be like great was shaken.
Yeah.
By him making some of the same mistakes twice, but yeah. I still think that he is going to be at worst case scenario. He is going to be a good starting quarterback in the NFL.
He'll be a Jag as long as they want him.
Yeah,
correct?
Yes. I think that's worst case what we're dealing with. And I absolutely think the potential for superstar is there. It's just so loaded in the AFC he's going to have way more of a difficult path than a lot of the other quarterbacks that have come along the last 25, 30 years in the AFC.
Denny Thompson, great work, brother. It's fun. Appreciate that. Denny Thompson talking quarterbacks with us. Let's say hello to D-Murph.
Now, the 2-Minute Drill, brought to you by Tire Outlet. Tire Outlet is now hiring. Visit tireoutlet.com/careers, equal opportunity employer.
Resting Belichick face.
Yes.
That is fantastic.
That is my sweatshirt.
I love your sweatshirt. So.
Thank you.
How you doing?
I am great. Taylor Dahl sent me the link to this.
Yeah.
And 2 months ago, I ordered it right away. And it took 2 months to get my way, but finally it got here.
You made the mashed potatoes?
I am the mashed potato champion in the building. Yes, I am.
Is it a family recipe?
It is a family recipe. Okay. It is TJ's recipe.
Oh, how about that?
They were light and fluffy.
They were light. They were also really good.
Yes.
So there you go. That was fun today.
It was fun.
So how you doing? What's going on? How are the Patriots? How are we doing? How are the Jags? Are you happy? You're not, what are you doing?
Patriots are better than the Jets.
Yeah. So that's
that.
Right. Yeah.
There's that. You got to be happy here in Jacksonville to not have Zach Wilson.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's also that.
There's all kinds of that's.
Okay. Tonight, we're going to get into a little Zach Wilson and how he likes to just, I guess, I don't know. Throw his team under the bus.
I can't wait to hear Donna talk about Zach Wilson. Can you? I mean,
it's going to be a tough couple hours.
This actually should be pay-per-view tonight on Helmets and Heels. So.
Yeah. Well, we'll get into Jimmy G. Did you watch the game last night, Jimmy G?
I actually did not.
No?
Yeah, he played well.
Yeah. Well, did you watch, I don't know if you guys saw it, there was Come On Man, ahead of time in pregame. And so it was a lovely Come On Man with Jimmy G at the Warriors game earlier in the week. So.
I didn't see it.
Oh, that was with the cheerleaders?
Yes, with the cheerleaders. It was lovely.
So we get Jimmy G and Zach tonight on the program.
I guess lots of pretty boys talk
there you go.
Tonight, but much more, and Thanksgiving. And we're going to do a spin on it. everybody talks about your favorite foods and your favorite sides and this. We're going to talk about what is the food you don't want to eat on Thanksgiving?
Cranberry sauce.
Cranberry sauce?
Can you put me down
for
that?
Do not give you cranberry sauce.
Can you put me down for that?
I'm the same way.
Yeah, cranberry sauce.
Yeah, I'm not a gravy person. No.
Okay.
Don't put gravy.
Anything cold that's supposed to be hot.
And there is that. Or give me exactly right. All right. Thank you, D-Murph.
Thank you, guys.
All right. Helmets and Heels comes up right now. It is Donna, Lauren, Taylor, and Mia coming up right now on the radio station. We're out of here tomorrow in studio, not at Island Wing, but we'll be back at Island Wing next Tuesday.
But tomorrow
we'll be right here in studio on our final day before Thanksgiving. That'll do it for our program. Don't go anywhere. Helmets and Heels is next on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.